I think last time I was here, we spoke a little bit about some of the problems that we're finding today in the not just the young people, but I don't know, for some reason, not just the young people, but in the 20, 30, 40-year-olds that are just drifting and some running away from Yiddishkeit. Talked a little bit about some of the complaints that they have, some of the issues and excuses, which they're not very happy with the use of that word, because they look at their issues as real issues rather than excuses, and definitely dealing with a serious problem. And I would say to a group of people that hopefully so many will find themselves in a position of teaching and what I like to call reaching the youth, maybe the adults of this generation and the next generation as well, I think it's important to try to outline, at least, if not delve into a little bit, some of the major issues that we have to, as mechanchim, be aware of, and how maybe to best develop talmidim that will be less vulnerable. Nobody is not vulnerable at all, but less vulnerable to all of these challenges and problems that arise, and hopefully be even more successful in educating the future generation. I think the first and simplest principle is that, believe it or not, the human being has four components. There are four components in a human being. There's the body and the soul, and parallel to that is the mind and the heart. And those work together. No, I shouldn't say that. Oftentimes they work in opposition. But this is the reality of the human condition. Satisfying or servicing a human being on one level and not the other is practically a guaranteed formula for failure. Not realizing that the human being is composed of those two, sometimes working together, sometimes working in opposite directions, combinations, is a guaranteed formula for failure. There's no question about it. And it's a mistake you hear so often, that there are people that believe that everything is intellectual. There are people out there that I'm aware of that even seem to feel that human beings don't have hearts. All they have is minds. They're totally intellectual. There are others that believe, excite them, get them emotionally high, you know, fire the emotions, sing a dance with them, face, you know, and you got it made. The reality is, it seems to me quite obvious that both are really missing the boat, because the human being is made up of this complex combination, and without catering to all aspects of our humanity, the chances of success in any reaching, in any inspiration, in any inspiring, any long-lasting commitment is is very, 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 very unlikely. So we have to deal with both. I think it's also quite obvious that if anyone were to ask, what's the organ of the body that makes decisions, and you were to answer the brain, then in fact, a better answer would probably be the heart. The heart is probably more influential than is the brain and the intellect in the decisions that we make. And therefore, as mechanchim or mashpiim, the only way to really deal with this human condition is to deal with everything. Now, what's the goal in dealing with everything? And the goal really is, I would put it in one word, helping the individual to achieve happiness. A happy student, a happy individual, totally happy, and we'll get to that in a moment, is not going anyplace. He's really, you know, he's fine. Everything's good. An unhappy person, and I think this is very important, tends to blame everything that gets, everything in his dalaramas, everything in his environment, everything that he comes into action with. So the unhappy person is going to blame, if I'm unhappy now, I'm going to blame everybody sitting in this room. I'm going to blame the wallpaper here on the woodwork. I'm going to blame the noise that's coming from downstairs, and it really isn't any. I'm going to blame the lighting and the heat and the lack of air conditioning and the aroma and everything. Everything is to blame. And on the way in here, everything is also to blame. On the way here, it's all everything. Whenever we come in contact with, if we're unhappy, the whole world is dismal, is black, is dark, and is to blame. And therefore, so many people who are not happy are certainly quick to blame their parents, their teachers, their rebbeim, their Yiddishkeit, their rebbeinu shel olam. And sometimes blame is articulated, sometimes blame is more subtle and subconscious, but that's what happens. So we have to get these people to be happy with themselves and with the critical elements in their environment in order to really be able to be makabel, to be guided, to be open-minded enough and comfortable enough with themselves to be able to accept and to internalize and to maintain a long-term commitment. That means that we have to cater to, and I've mentioned it so many times here, I'm a little bit hesitant to mention it again, but and validate them, because happiness is about feeling good about yourself. So we've discussed that many times. On every level. That means on the level of the mind, on the level of the heart, on the level of the body, on the level of the soul. Now, that's not an easy task, but that's what we have to do. The good news is that's exactly what Yahadus does. Yahadus speaks to the total individual. And it's no coincidence, obviously. And it's not even because the Chachomim and the Torah were so smart that it was able to figure out the essence of the human existence and therefore speak to it. But it's rather because the human existence was designed according to the blueprint of the Torah. And therefore, we are what the Torah and what Chazal say we are. That's why we are the way we are. And understanding what they say and how they understood us is actually understanding how we act and why we act. And that's what we have to deal with. And a full appreciation, commitment, understanding, observance of Torah, Taryag Mitzvahs, with all the Abizrayu, is the formula for this happiness, total happiness of body and soul, mind and heart. But we fall short in our presentation and representation of these
concepts. And that's really where we have to strengthen ourselves. The Torah, if you study any of the ones that explain the Sefer Chinuch or others, explain the Torah in terms of its spiritual and emotional and its bodily and physical effects that it has on a person. And all of these lead to the everything working in sync and creating that total sense of feeling good about myself. And once you have that, you're primed for success. So where do we go, and how do we go about it, or what are some of the most important ingredients in this process? And I think that's this is the goal, and let's talk about some of the ingredients. Let's start with a very non-controversial one. We'll get to the controversy later. Okay? Non-controversial. Challenge the minds of your Talmidim if you wish them to feel good about themselves in the process of learning. Bring out their creativity. Allow them to think and appreciate the joy of thinking. Challenge them with questions that are elevating, that they have to stand on their toes to reach, but yet not beyond their reach, so that they're going to be frustrated and never being able to achieve the goal. Create an interactive atmosphere in learning, an exciting atmosphere in learning, a give and take that both challenges and excites and interests and keeps awake everybody and everybody's participation. Much easier said than done, and any classroom Rebbe will tell you that, or most will tell you it's impossible. I don't think they're right that it's impossible, but it's quite difficult. It's quite a challenge. And whatever preparation and experience and training and guidance that one can get to get there will be very helpful. But that's the goal. The learning is exciting. Those that are excited about the learning, Gemara, will never ask the question, why is it so important to learn all the time? What do you mean so important to learn? It's fun. It's more fun than what they do all day long. That's all. Portion. I'll never forget. I meant to mention this here. I have a vague recollection. A Cheder Rebbe in Yerushalayim many, many years ago, when we were there once for a summer, one of my little children there says, he called me over when we were leaving, he said, oh, they're going to America. He probably had Rachmonis on this kid, that he's leaving Yerushalayim to go to America, Nebuch. And he says, he wants to teach me what teaching is. He says, the principle of teaching is Lule Teirosho Shashuoi. The Torah is a delight. And he said, it makes no difference whether you're learning Aleph Beis or Rambam. That was like the highest level, It's a delight. The delight. Make it a Shashua. Make it a delight. And you have it made. And this is something that we have to work very hard on. So many questions, so many issues, so much rebellion, so much annoyance, so much laziness can be dispelled if it's exciting. And it's not that difficult. And speaking to this group, I would say, it really shouldn't be that difficult, because you're not used to long, boring lectures. And you're not used to just sitting back and falling asleep, I hope. And, listening with half an ear, maybe taking notes with instead of listening. But you're used to that. And that's what you have to create in every classroom. Excitement, excitement, excitement. That excitement will take them so far. That excitement really talks to the intellect as much as it talks to the emotion. Because it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's thrilling. It's challenging. And give everyone a chance to rise to the challenge and validate them, not when it's inappropriate because they see through that, but find the validation for each one. It makes you ask a good question. Wow, what a question. First of all, by the way, if you praise someone for his question, then the fact that you don't know the answer is not so terrible because it was such a good question. You know, if it's a stupid question you can't answer, then you're really in bad shape. So like, you know, so it's, you pray, wow, and this, and what an insight, and that's good. Everybody, they feel so good. And a little compliment after. And a little note to the parent. Or one Rebbe that I knew, I can mention his name, Rabbi Josh Silberman, Zichrono Livracha, was a master machanech. He would send a note sometimes to a grandparent. Wow, who thinks of that? My grandparents got a note saying, what a kasha yesterday, what a beautiful, what this, what that, you know. It's and that's really where it's at. You excite, you stimulate. Now, in this process is something else too. It's very important. Didn't even get started yet. And that is giving them tools. I believe I mentioned in the discussion last time that Rashi's definition of chinuch, which is tchilas knisas odom le'umnus she'osol osid la'amoboy, on the posuk in Vayorikas Hanichov. Tchilas knisas means that the machanech is doing the beginning, but the knisa has to do the Talmud. That means you've got to give him the tools to be constantly machnis himself into newer and higher and further levels. Tools are very important. The tools of thinking, the tools of reading, the tools of analysis. How many people, you know, years ago they understood this in a very primitive way. They used to say in the yeshivas that the kid at Shvacha, he can't learn Gemara, teach him how to daven for an omen. Oy, at daven for an omen, so, at blibin Hashem Shabbos, you know, he'll remain Shem Shabbos, he can go to shul, he can daven for the omen. You know, we're a little more sophisticated today. Don't settle for his being able to daven for the omen. And for some kids, that might be harder than learning Gemara, too. But teach him. He should learn the skills of reading, the skills of analysis, the skills of what the Gemara is all about. Do you know how many kids are learning Gemara today and have no idea of a Torah Shebichsav and a Torah Shebal Peh and a Mesirah and a Mishnah and Chachomim Darshani Psukim and why and what's the Psukim about? What's the Torah Shebal Peh? This is the Posik, it's the Posik, it's in the Posik, it's not in the Posik, it's here for the Posik. What in the world are you talking about? It's all gibberish. There's a sefer at the back of Brochus, Mevoy HaTalmud, I think it's called. It's a Rishay. Push it just what it's all about. And there's many other books, I'm sure, that are written today. But if they don't have a sense of, what's the Gemara doing? The Gemara seems like so irrelevant, so, and then you hear those words. I mean, you know, I haven't heard it for years, but in my day, you say, oh, that's a Gemara Kasha. That's like some stupid question, you know. That's a Gemara Kasha. That's a Benish Elaylam. And when you show, especially if you can show Shikra Das, Havamina Maskot, everything makes sense. But in order to do this, you got to do a few things. Well, one is you have to know how to learn a little bit. But let's skip that. Let's hope it's not too late for that. But you have to be able to answer questions. You have to be able to deal with questions, because this excitement can only be generated if the Rebbe can handle the questions. If the Rebbe finds questions to be threatening, if the Rebbe has an ego that's fragile and easily undermined because this student is asking too many piercing questions. And remember, you'll never be in a classroom where there isn't one kid there that's not a bigger Balkishran than you. How do you like that for a statement? Never be in a classroom where there's not one kid, I mean, it's rare, unless you have three kids in the class, maybe you have a chance. But never be in a classroom when there isn't one little kid, he could be 5 years old, he'll be a bigger Balkishran than you. Jews are brilliant. And you got to be prepared for that. You know how to learn better, I hope. But you have to be able to deal with his questions. Now, there's two ways to deal with questions. Well, there's a few ways. One way is always it's a good question. Unless it's a stupid question, then you have to answer it and pretend it wasn't so bad a question, so as not to invalidate him completely, but not to mislead him to think that he's some kind of a Torah genius. It's a valid as much as you can. But something else. One is to give an answer. Have to give an answer and explain an answer. And make the answer logical and palatable and in a way that he could understand what you're answering. Don't answer just to show that you're able to give an answer. And don't ever make up an answer that's not real, because he'll see through that. But you have to give an answer. There's another answer that's also good. And that answer is, I don't know. First of all, when you preface, I don't know it, that's a very good question, you gain a lot of mileage, as I mentioned before. Ask a good question. For most people don't even care if they have an answer. As long as they ask a good question, that's enough. And then you buy yourself a little time. Let me think about it. Let me go home and think about it. I'll come back tomorrow and answer you. Let me go ask somebody else. Let's discuss it. Why don't you go home and ask your whoever it is that you might, something. But you take it seriously. But if you're threatened by it, and if you make like this, or if you have no time for questions, or if we don't ask questions over here, or if the worst of it, that's such a stupid question, or like the Grace of Rosh Yeshiva there in Eretz Yisrael said, "Ata afilu lo medaber shtuyot." Yeah? Then 10 minutes later, the kid asks another question. He says, "Achshav ata medaber shtuyot." It doesn't work. That's not chinuch. That's retzicha. That's why the Rosh Yeshivas have to go traveling all over the world to raise money because of the people that they killed b'shoigeg. You know that worked anyway. That's what you're dealing with. So you got to be very, 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 very careful about how and exactly under what, which way. But that's about. You know, the Reb David used to say that there was a Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vadas who was a big lamdan. He says, but he called him a lamdan of Morgan. He says he was a lamdan for tomorrow because he couldn't answer a question b'shas ma'isa. It didn't work for him. But he would go home and think about it and come back with a good answer because he was really a lamdan. But he needed the next, nothing wrong. Oh, but you got to get back to that. Remember, don't forget the next day. And this process can become meaningful and exciting. And if you're giving them tools, and if you give them an introduction and a constant refresher course of the context, what is the Gemara doing? Where is it coming from? Where is it going to? What's it mean? It's darshening psukim. It's deriving. It is deriving. It's not deriving. What does it need to derive it for? What? Whose authority? Who can ask? Who can answer? Who's saying? What is he saying? All these things, which probably we don't know too much about. But all of that stuff, then he has a sense of, oh, it's exciting, it's fun, it's meaningful. I understand where it's coming from. I understand where it's going to. It makes me feel good about myself. I have a chance to excel. I have a chance to be creative. I have a chance to be recognized. I think we could stop right here. You wouldn't need any more than that.
Even if it's fun, you're saying, because you get to that it's fun, then it doesn't matter, why am I doing this? But meaning it could be later in life, down the line, when problems come up and stuff like that, it's not going to be fun. All of a sudden, why am I doing?
Wait, first of all, excuse me. I wasn't serious about ending right now. Okay, I'm just getting warmed up. Okay, so you're right, definitely right. But this is the first step. This will get you a lot of mileage, because I have a. But again, it's understanding where it's coming from. It's understanding what it means now. There's no question, and let's go to the next step, and I appreciate you leading us there. Although I promise you, I wasn't planning to leave right now. So let's go to the next step. The next step, I would say, comes with a very big chiddush. A chiddush that you have to introduce into all of your learning and all of your classroom teaching. And I would summarize the chiddush by say, Rabbi Isai, Kinderlach, there's a God in the world. Introduce him. You're smiling. When's the last time you thought about it? No, anyway, let's not go into that. Okay? There's a God in the world. He's the God of creation. He's the God of Hashgocha Protis. And he's the God of Maimon Har Sinai. And this is the Teres Hashem that he gave it to us at Har Sinai. And here comes, when you introduce him into the formula, what you're also really doing is introducing the emotion as well. You're starting to talk not only to the intellect and the soul, because the Gemara talks to the soul as well, but you're also talking to the emotion. Ashrei mi that can present such an excitement with the learning, seeming so passionate about his learning that the Talmidim just catch it. You know, I'm sure I mentioned once here what we say, we don't mention our children. All of a sudden we're saying we should be or we will be, and so forth. Why don't we ask that our children should have it pleasurable? I don't know what the pshat is, to tell you the truth. But I think it may be that if they see the Vaharev no on the previous generation, on the Rebbe or on the parent, then it'll be Anachnu v'tzetzo einu v'tzetzo ei tzetzo einu. You can even say that nusach. Kulanu yoyde eishemecho v'loim de teirosecho. That's what's going to be. Seeing that excitement, seeing that passion, seeing that. And if they see that the Torah has a shaychus to the Rebbeinu Shalel, if they see the way I make a birchas HaTorah, if they sense that I have such a respect for Chazal, if they sense that I'm so excited about seeing a little insight, I have to tell you, this morning we were learning something, and tonight there was a fellow from almost Kemat, he used to be in yeshiva from the outside. I sat down with him for 20 minutes to tell him over what we learned. And I heard just one little nuance differently from more than what I heard this morning. It's a simcha. The guy was like, I couldn't help but show how excited I was. I thanked him so much that he didn't say very much. I was talking the whole time. But it doesn't matter. But just, if they could feel, wow, you get excited. You hear something good. You get excited about it. So then the pshat is, and why am I excited? I say, oh, Baruch Hashem, I feel, and gradually don't overdo it, because if you overdo this, they mamish will they'll lock you up. But if we have a shver toisvus, you're going to laugh. Take out a moment like the Chazon Ish did, like the Nefesh HaChaim says you can, and say a kapitel tilim. Nefesh HaChaim says, talking about refocusing the dveikus b'Hashem. But the Chazon Ish, he had a shver sugya, he would stop, close the Gemara, maybe left the Gemara open, I don't know, I wasn't there, and say a kapitel tilim. It's the Rebbeinu Shalel. Ki Hashem yitein chochmo. Mipiv dasu svuno.
You have to believe this.
What?
You have to believe this.
It has to be real, right?
Anyone who doesn't believe that should please leave the room right now.
It has to be real. Does it have to be real when you do it? Like
not believe it. You have to feel
it inside.
Here
we go again.
You have to feel it inside.
It only works.
What do you mean you have to feel it inside?
If you put on a show, it won't work.
What do you mean you don't feel it inside?
For those who don't feel it, wouldn't work, right?
Those who don't feel it, should work in the post office, maybe. I send a lot of people to the post office these days. I hate to tell you where they're being mailed to if they work in the post office. But anyway, but I don't know. Yeah, come on, what do you mean you don't feel it? Yishokeinim and shikos pihu. Ki tovim doidecho miyoy. And I sat the other night with a guy who I don't even know today if he's Shomer Shabbos. He used to be a real Ben Torah, and then he went off, one of these people that went off, and now he's on his way back, but I can't swear that he's a Shomer Shabbos. And we're learning this, Yishokeinim and shikos pihu.
Yeah,
and he
ben
comes
Torah.
Back, what?
Yeah, who's really Ben Torah.
Where have you been?
Here.
It's nothing to laugh about. It's nothing to laugh about. But that's it. Anyway, and this, Yishokeinim and Shikos, wow, Har Sinai, Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke directly, pale, pale, like Neshikas HaPel, like a chosen to a kala. Lo kafayad, below ala kotev, ela pale, pale. Mamish, the greatest expression of chibur, and Klal Yisrael today still craves for this Maimon Har Sinai. Ki tovim doidecho miyayim mikol mishteyayim besimcha. A Jew can't, and this guy's sitting there talking to me, and he says, and a Jew can't. That's why the Jew has to be ahead of every movement, of every ism, of everything, because of all the Nobel prizes and all the discoveries, because he's not satisfied, because he stood at Har Sinai, and the neshama craves that neshikas pihu once again. Now, again, don't carry on like this. They'll carry you away. But, you know, but let them see that we're passionate. Let them hear that Reb Baruch Ber said that if he didn't cry when he said Abba Rabba, don't start crying when you say Abba Rabba, because they're not going to believe it. But if he didn't cry when he said Abba Rabba, he couldn't be Machadish in Torah that day. Connect the Torah with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Rebitza, don't you dare do this either. Rebitza, you say, Omer Abaye, Vosat Abaye gizokt that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam zokt. Don't say, you know what I said in Yiddish, you don't even know what I said. But, you know, what did Abaye say that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said? Don't do that.
Why?
But that's the idea. Why? I don't know. Maybe you should do that. I don't know. It's a
right,
little
what
bit.
The Talmidim say, Rebbe, this happened, Harsin happened 3,000 years ago. We're talking about right here, right now. That how can I connect to something like that when that was, you're right, maybe it is something that went back 3,000 years, but still, I wasn't there that long ago. I'm dealing with right here, right now.
Okay, very good. So now it's time for an aside. You did it. Now here I have two possibilities. I could say, well, I have a whole curriculum here, which I plan to do over a number of weeks. Imagine that. I finally got my act together to get organized. And this really is on a later page in the curriculum, and therefore we can't do that. But that would be giving you a very bad pedagogical example, because the reality is when someone asks a question, that's the perfect time to begin to answer him, because you have a captive audience. At least you got one captive in the audience, one guy who's interested in the question and the answer. So this would be the appropriate thing to do. So let me just talk to this in just a few broad strokes, okay? Because I don't want to take the whole time, because I really do have a sequence of things that I want to go into, which obviously won't finish tonight, but you know, maybe they'll invite me back again. So, but let's talk a few things, okay? Number one, you know, this Torah of Oz is a very, very strange thing. It has survived intact over 3,300 years. The Torah Shebichsav, exactly every single word. In fact, at this point, I would mention to you, as I've mentioned here before, I do recollect that there's a rabbi in Hollywood, Florida, who when he brings a sefer to fix his Sifrei Torah every couple of years, and the Reform rabbi also brings the sefer. When the guy's coming, so he tells him to come to his temple, and the sefer asks the Reform rabbi, "Rabbi, why do you need a guy like me? A Chassidus sefer comes in there, you know, to fix the Sifrei Torah." So he says to him, he says, "I want to tell you something. Those scrolls are the only genuine thing I have in this temple. I want to make sure they stay that way." So nobody ever changed it. These that they believe it, they don't believe it, they want it. It's the same. Not only has the Torah survived, and you know how many times it's been burnt at the stake? You know how many efforts have been to destroy it? Survived. Torah Shebaal Peh as well. Torah Shebaal Peh wasn't even written down for so long. Then it was finally written down and passed from generation to generation. We know the names of the people who passed it on from one generation to the next to this very day. Rabbi Yankee Venden swears by his life that the miracles that have allowed this Torah to survive and the Klal Yisrael with it are greater than the miracles of Kriyas Yam Suf and Tzias Mitzrayim. So the survival is miraculous. And who participated in this survival? Everybody knows the Jews were the greatest minds in all of human history. To this very day, the Nobel Prize winners, the scientists, the inventors, the leaders of every society, of every tkufa throughout human history, has been the Jews. There's some beautiful stories about when the Jews were leaving, how Goyim cry out to them and say, "Please take us with you. We can't have a country. We can't have a civilization without you." It's a very beautiful text that I read or I heard once. But so this is the most brilliant minds of every generation. And then I would tell a story. I would tell him, just because this guy sounded like a little bit of doubt in his voice, you know what I mean? Well, I don't know. He was speaking for your friend, I'm sure. But anyway, he sounded with a little bit of doubt in his voice. So I would say to him, you know, when I was 15 years old, and it's the Maaseh Shehoyah, I was 15 years old, all of a sudden, one day, I started to think, I said, how do I know what happened in Har Sinai? I wasn't there. It's 3,300 in those days. It was still 3,300 years ago. No, it was less than 3,300 years ago. Anyway, so it was a long time ago. And the kids said, so how do I know what happened in Har Sinai? I started to get a little bit nervous. Baruch Hashem, I had just read a biography, a short 70-page biography of the Vilna Goyim. And I saw what a genius he was. And I thought to myself, I says, you know, any question or any doubt or any thought that I have, the Vilna Goyim certainly thought of too. And he remained the Vilna Goyim. That'll hold me over for a while too. And it did until, you know, a couple years later I began to understand things a little better. So, you know, things like this. Then I would also explain to them that the Torah was written in such a way that the greatest crime is to falsify the Torah. A Torah Shebichsav that has a mistake is put away. The darkle on the outside, very embarrassing. You are posel. And the halacha is you got to fix it within 30 days. You can't leave a dovah shein and mesukah. A Baal Torah that reads a word wrong? Oy vavoy, what they do to him, they bafal. And this has been going on for thousands of years. This is a system that has maintained its integrity. Now, it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is also in such a way that it's been passed down meticulously, generation to generation, generation to generation, with a Mesorah, with many Talmidim. Every Rav had so many Talmidim, and they all passed it down, and it was guarded, and the halacha was, you can't falsify it. Do you know what the Marshal Paskins in Bava Kamma in by the Mishnah there where it says Shorshal Akum Shinoga Shiyodeu Takifa Shorshal Akum Shinoga Shorshal Yisroel is Chayev Shorshal Yisroel Shinoga Shorshal Akum is Potter. And if a goy asks you what's the halacha there, you're not allowed to lie. And even if he'll threaten to kill you, you have to tell him the truth because it's Yehoreg Valyavor to falsify one halacha in a Mishnah. Is it a wonder that the Torah survived all these Doris? Because to falsify, to say, at the threat of your life, one halacha, to say no. The same thing now, for a Jew, for a goy, we both have to pay, or for a Jew, for a goy, we both don't have to pay. That's all you have to say. Soon they give you life. And that's the way the Torah survived. Because it demanded Mesiras Nefesh not to change an iota. Now, you may also have to go into a long explanation about machlekes, and that's really beautiful, but that's not for now. I'll have to leave that. You have to forgive me. I'll owe you a machlekes, okay? But that we have to, it's written up. I have it written up if you want. You could read it. But anyway, so that's it. But then there's something else, too. And these are just a few thoughts, and, you know, like, we'll come back to more later, but just, you know. One of the things that Balei Tshuva are most nispoil about, believe it or not, is the contents of the Igros Moshe. The table of contents of the Igros Moshe, or the table of contents of other modern-day tshuvas for him. Do you know why? Because they say, how could it be that based on ancient texts, ancient, irrelevant, did you use that word?
No.
No, okay, well, it sounded like that. Okay, ancient, irrelevant texts, that they can decide halachas on modern-day questions, modern-day inventions, things that now they got new technology inside the refrigerator, which they have to also decide based on texts that were written thousands of years ago. That's the nishtoimim. So, it's relevant. It's relevant. In fact, the genius of Torah is that it's always relevant. The genius they once tapped, Zilberman told me this, Yitzchak Shlomo Zilberman, that's the one who was mashpia on Uri Zohar. If you read Uri Zohar's, what's his book called, My Friends We Were Robbed, or Waking Up Jewish, he had two versions. I think the latest one was My Friends We Were Robbed. So he writes there about some old rabbi that he started arguing with, and eventually, after months and months and months, that he turned around, he turned him fire, he's like today. You know, a masmir, a talmud chochum, a godel, is not shaykh. Anyway, so the Zilberman is the one who was mashpia, and that's the old man. He doesn't mention his name there. So he says somebody once tapped him on the shoulder in shul and says, "Prove to me in one sentence, Torah min hashamayim, that the Torah is from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam." So he told him the following. He says, "Where do you find a volume that a 3-year-old child and a 95-year-old man who studied it thousands of times can both study and find meaning and relevance and inspiration? Only the Rabbeinu Shel Olam can write such a book." So there's so much that can be said on an emotional level, because this is an emotional question, really, that can be, and this is just the beginning, and you have to explain other things. He may have questions. He may have questions about Mesorah. He may have questions about Machlokes. But you have to deal with, and Rabbi Isai, as long as we're here, we should say this. We have to be proficient in these things. And we have to be so proficient that they're at our fingertips. So that when a question, because one question asked from a serious student in a public forum, that you're bluffing, or you're hiding from, or you're ignoring, or you're insulting for asking such a stupid question, you're finished. Not only are you finished, you planted the seeds of rebellion and off the derech in the minds of so many of the other people sitting in the room. So, okay, but where I forgot now where I was. What's that?
Introducing everyone to Hashem. Introducing the students to Hashem.
Oh, yes, at least somebody was listening. Very good. Okay, so now, it's very important to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu
in as much as possible. Some people like to say the tefillah at the beginning, you know, of the, that you find in the beginning of the Gemara is there. That just the idea that some people like to share the Gemara. Haraitzah sheyachkim the Gemara neither dafayin omid beis yasuk bechochma. Harbi also came for the also be yodom. Eli yavakish rachamim emisha chochma shaloi. Shenema ki Hashem yitain chochma mipiv dasus vuna. He gives a moshel the melech that he has a feast and he feeds his closest people from his private stock. What do you need both? You need both. It's a tanai, you have to work. But basically, it's a gift from Hashemayim. You got to Matzos, so you could tell him the goyins for. And all these things should be thrown in nonchalantly from here and there, from time to time. You got to blame Matzos. What says Metziah? You got to brings Metziah? Yes. We work in Torah, and Hashem sends us information. He gives us insight. He gives us understanding. And thank Hashem. Baruch Hashem. You know, we should be so... There's a guy, he lives in Queens someplace, and this is in Kew Garden Hills, I think. So he tells a story about he was learning with his uncle, who was a big Rosh Hashiva, and his uncle asked a kasha, and he gave a beautiful teretz, yeah? And his uncle got up with him, and this is already, he must have been 18, 19, around 20 years old, and started to do a dance with him. He was so excited with his teretz. So it left a lifelong impression on this person. I don't know, I couldn't do such a thing. But anyway, it left a lifelong impression on him. Years later, they came to discuss. This is just a footnote. It has nothing to do with the discussion. Came to discuss it. And so he reminded his uncle about this story. So he said, what was the kasha and what was your teretz? So he said, he doesn't remember. So he says, we shouldn't have danced after all. But anyway, whatever it is. Lamaisa, you know, something that shows there's an excitement. This is a gift from Hashem. We appreciate, we thank Hashem. We're going to make a suda seidor. We're going to say nishmas. We're going to do something. Bring the Rebbeinu Shalom. When you just focus that, oh yeah, I feel I'm getting it. He's helping us. We need Seata Dishmaya. All of these things, you know, are very, very, very helpful. If something happens where you can show the hashgocha process in the learning, like somebody asked a question and we didn't know the answer, and all of a sudden one of the sfarim fell from up there, you know, and we looked and opened up to a page. Now, this is exaggerated, obviously. I opened up to a page and said, exactly the question that you asked, and look at the beautiful answer. Whatever you can introduce, you got to use your own opportunities. Hashem provides us constant opportunities to bring him into our lives if we so choose. But that's also a very, very critical ingredient in this process. Now, as long as we're talking about the learning, I think we have to address a little bit, you know, your point. Now, long-winded introductions like this are never going to work, okay? But I have no choice. But over a period of time, to introduce some basic concepts, one of the most basic concepts that has to be introduced and that's missing in the lives of people, of Talmidim, and that's probably missing in the lives of everyone, if not almost everyone, who has or will or does go off the derech, is what's the purpose of creation? What are we here for? Like you say, it's posh, take it for granted. Okay, anyone want to step up here and lecture about it? Just kidding. Let me ask you a question. If happiness means, if happiness is about feeling good about myself, validation, and I don't even know the purpose for which I'm on this world, how good can I feel about myself? I'm excited that Gemara is fun, my television is fun, my internet is fun, everything I'm doing is wonderful, but if I have no purpose in this world, I can't be happy. Because happiness is about feeling good about yourself, not feeling good from the outside, feeling good from the inside. And if I don't know if I have a purpose here or what my purpose is, how good can I feel? Any shrink will tell you that someone who walks into his office and says, I have no purpose in living, he will call up the closest of kin and say, we have to put this person on suicide watch. That's what it amounts to. I have no purpose in living. Then why live? So what's the purpose? The purpose of creation. And this is very important to find opportunity, and it has to be visited a few times. Now, it's just, you could say, the purpose of creation is for the Yisroel Shei Yitzhaskel B'Torah. That's the purpose, and that's what you'll hear. That people know that because that's right at the beginning of Bereishis there. Bishvil Reishis, Bishvil Yisroel, Shias Askabater. They never got to the next parasha.
Is Rebbe but, saying that's why people go off?
What's that?
Is Rebbe saying that could be a reason why people go off because they don't feel the purpose?
Absolutely. Let's say like this. I don't know if it's the reason they go off, but I do know it would be a very big reason to keep them on. If you have a sense of what it's all about and you know the purpose and you enjoy it and you're happy and you find it and many all the other things that we have to talk about tonight and who knows when, then yeah, that certainly will help prevent. So what's the purpose? What's it all about? What are we doing here in this world? Very, very important. To say just Bishvil Yisrael Shesasku Batoira is really not saying anything for me. Like, what? That's the purpose? Just to learn? Like, that's all? Whoa, what are you talking about? So it's very important, you know, I mean, I don't want to give a whole lecture about that now, but the basic Mesil Seshorim and Olam Chesed Yibone, and the purposes are Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to be Meitiv, and the only way to be Meitiv, the ultimate Hatova is that Dveikus Vashem, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted that we should be worthy of it. That's why he created the world Bereishis Bora Elokim with Mishpot, because without Mishpot it's Nama de Kisufo, you didn't earn it, you'll be embarrassed, and so forth and so on. And the whole thing, but it's all, there's a system of maximizing Hashem's chesed to us. The ultimate of maximizing that chesed is to become as godly as humanly possible. As godly as humanly possible. How do we do that? That's through Torah. That's what the Torah is. The Torah is a formula for human godliness. The mitzvahs, Chazal say, are litzaref b'enes habriyos, to refine our character. It's all about refinement of character. And the Torah is that formula for the ultimate achievement of human godliness, which will allow us to feel that closeness to Hashem, and the closer the relationship with Hashem, the greater the hatovah, the greater the chesed, the greater the good feeling, the greater the happiness, the greater the fulfillment, the greater the validation, and that's what it's all about. Now, problem, wait, let me finish, okay? Because I could forget. I do forget. Now, I forgot already. See, the problem with this is one major problem. Don't quote the Mesilas Yeshorim unless you explain it. V'hamokoyim ho'idin hazeh hu, what does he say? Oh, thank you. But let's just misquote it and say, Hamokoyim ho'idin hazeh hu ho'ilam habo. Out of here. Not interested. Count me out. Have no patience. I don't want to lay. I'm 14 years old. I'm 15 years old. I don't want to die at 15. I want to live. And by the time I get to Olam Haba already, I'm going to be, I don't know what. But this Mesil shows who be'emes Olam Haba. He explains why. Because it's nivris b'chona ha-mitztareches, the Dovah says. It has all the ingredients for this ultimate Dveikus Hashem, because there is no body. The body is not pulling in different directions. The emotions are not leading me astray. It's a place of spirituality, maybe of intellect and spirituality. And there, without the distractions, that's the ultimate thrill of Dveikus Hashem. But we can feel it in this world too. We can feel schar mitzvah hayom malek only means that there's no schar that's worthy enough, that's great enough to reward a mitzvah. But that doesn't mean Hashem doesn't reward mitzvahs. The Torah is full of indications that there are rewards and mitzvahs in this world. And Mimele, in this world, you can feel that closeness, Hashem. You could feel that Vekis. You could feel that David HaMelech said, the Mesil Shem Taka brings right over there, V'ani kirvas elikim li toiv. What's the ultimate good of David HaMelech's life? Kirvas elikim. That's what it's all about. And we can feel this in this world. And this already begins to, but in order to connect to Hashem, I have to be godly. If I have nothing in common with someone, I can't have much of a relationship. Relationships are built on a commonality of interests and feelings and emotions. And if I don't have that, so I have to become God. And the Torah is the system to become godly. The Torah is full. That's what it is. It's all about. As the Rosh Hashiva told me, I remember in the first conversation I ever had with him, he says, the Bali Musa looked at this world as a laboratory. Each person is given his own raw materials,
and they tell you, make the best possible individual that you can from the raw materials that you were given, from the hand that you were dealt. And that's the tachlis. And, by the way, this has double, if not triple, effect on happiness. You know why? Because if happiness is about feeling good about myself, number one, the goal is godliness. How would I feel about myself if you were God? You know, how would you feel about yourself? Could you get any more validity than that? Number one. Number two, I have a purpose. Purpose makes me feel good about myself. And my purpose is so elevated. And my purpose was given to me by the none other than the Creator Himself, who is the only one who could possibly know my true purpose. So I have this maximum access to happiness through this process. Now, this process itself is a bit sophisticated. I wouldn't suggest saying this in the first grade. Today, second graders are pretty sharp. I don't know if they're, I'm not sure where, you know, probably you need junior high school to begin. But even younger, in fact, I believe younger kids get it better than we do. The younger kids probably understand more about Hashem, and then they forget it when everything in society and everyone around them, including us and their parents and everyone else, starts to pollute their environment. But whatever it is, you know, you have to figure out exactly where. But it's a bit sophisticated, and it has to be brought down to a very practical human level. And that's where another critical ingredient comes in that's a must for this whole formula. And that ingredient is Hashem's Hashgacha Pratis. Hashem's intimate and detailed involvement in our lives. If they don't have this sense of his Hashgacha Pratis, of his involvement in my life, if they think that everything I do and everything he does, there's a disconnect, I pray a lot, but I don't hear any answers, I don't hear any response. It's too remote, it's too abstract, and then life gets difficult, and I don't know how to cope with the difficulty, and this all starts to unravel. So it's very important from the earliest stages of life, and this is the cradle mamish, to introduce people, children, human beings, Jews, I guess, to the Chesed Hashem, to his Hashgacha Pratis. From the littlest kid who finds something, oh, Hashem, Baruch Hashem, I found it, look, wow, it's the foundation of the connection with the Borei Olam, and when you have an independent connection through the Hashgacha Pratis that he has played in your life and in the life of your family, and then you connect that with the Torah that he gave us in Har Sinai, which is the ultimate excitement and fun and the revelation of the purpose of all of creation to enable me to purify and refine my character to be able to be Zeicha to the highest levels of pleasure. Nivra Ella, somebody, I know a great man used to misquote the Mesillas Yesharim, said, Ho'odom lo nivra Ella hisanik. Man was only created for pleasure. The only thing is, there is only one great pleasure, and that's lisanik al Hashem. She had, and Mesillas Yesharim says, She ha eden ha, has it say, ha tainug ha godo, eden ha tainug ha miti, eden ha godo, mikol eidunum shecholom limotze. That's it. But that's what it's about. And I can feel that now. So I have to feel Hashem's involvement in my life. To have that, and by the way, when a person feels Hashgacha Pratis, you don't have to be philosophical about emuna and about all these things. The existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not even a discussion. I don't know whether there's a God in the world, but I know one thing, he gets involved in every aspect of my life. Okay? In fact, if you don't know who he is, address him by saying to whom it may concern. Makes a difference. I mean, I don't really mean this, but you get the point. He's there. What? I gotta go prove him. I gotta go. Ooh, how do I know? Where do I know? What? Like the lady. There's a famous lady. I forgot her name. Who's a Holocaust survivor. I hope she's still a Holocaust survivor. And many years ago, she used to walk around lecturing about the Holocaust. And when they would always invariably everybody, somebody right in the back, would go, "Where was God during the Holocaust?" And she would answer, "Right here by my side the whole time, taking care of me, protecting me, guiding me, assuring my survival." And when they feel that, then it makes it a reality. I'm connected.
then, when this comes in first, when this is the girsa de yankisa, then later on, when life gets a little challenging and trying, I'm capable of internalizing and recognizing and processing the challenges as also part of Hashem's kol mad over rachmon letav ovid oylem chesed yibone and gamzu letoiva and the like. Try kol mad over rachmon letav ovid or gamzu letoiva to a person who is sitting on a floor on the chair and mourning the loss of a young child or whatever. It's too late. No, never too late. But it's not the optimal time. I have so much negative feelings. I'm so distraught. I'm so depressed. I'm so broken. Rather get me at a time before. So but then when these things happen, I'm prepared. I'm not only am I receptive to the message, I know the message. Maybe I need a little chizuk. I need a little inspiration. I need a little warming up. I need a little nechama. But the kelim are there because, so that's another piece I think that's very important in this process, that introduction of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Now, there's another piece. This is really just, I guess, a bit of an overview because it's not a very in-depth discussion. Although, I do have a couple of things I'm going to leave here. I just pulled them as I ran out. One little four-page thing here. It's called The Psychology of Emuna. I think it's Kedai. It's very small, so you may need magnifying glass. The print is very small, but I don't know why they did it that way. But anyway, so something it's Kedai for everybody to read, I suggest. You'll leave something else, which I only have. It's a pre-publication copy. Which I'm going to leave here. If anyone wants to read it, make copies of it. They're supposed to put it up on the website, but we had a problem with it because there's we can read the Sefer Torah, and therefore we have to redo the cover. But it's to instill a lasting emunah in a changing generation. It's a guide for machanchim, something that I strongly recommend. It has a lot of information, also about Torah Misinai, also about the purpose of human existence, also about machlokes and chazal. And then about coping with difficulties and many, many other topics, the purpose of creation, the source of happiness, developing relationship with students. It's a lot of good information, which anyone wants to make copies, it should be on the website sometime by next week, and eventually there will be, when it's fully published, it will be available. Anyway, let's just go to very briefly just another couple of points, and the hour is late. You want your students, your children, ourselves, to do a lot of things. We do a lot of things. If you think about it, it's a little scary. From the time you wake up in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night, you know how many things you do? From the Ani to the Negel Vasser, to the Brochas, to the Tzitzis, to the Tfilin, to the Shachris is a long one, very, you know, it takes a lot of time. To the Brochas, to the Birchas Hamozen, to the learning, to the again and Mincha and then Mayriv and the this and then that. From Moida and the more Moida Ani in the morning till Amapil at night, there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of religious observances, rituals, brochas, and everything else that we do. Not to mention the extensiveness of some of them, like how much time is spent in tefillah, how much time is spent in learning. And this is, you know, it's a tear, that's a burden. Not to mention all of the restrictions. The Torah is full of restrictions. Ask any kid, ask your friend sitting next to you. The Torah is full of restrictions. You know. And unfortunately, unless we can view the restrictions as privileges and opportunities, unless we can view the burdens as privileges and opportunities, it becomes very overwhelming. And it even can have a ripple effect because of the extensive burden that everything else that we talked about until now can start to come into question and to be challenged and to even change my attitude towards it and to start to think that, well, maybe it isn't so exciting, maybe it isn't so interesting, maybe it isn't so relevant, maybe it isn't so important, maybe it's not so involved in my life, maybe this, everything can unravel when you ask a person to spend his whole day limited, restricted, and so burdened doing so many different things. So, not a problem. That means that critical to this process, and maybe one of the most critical ingredients in this whole process, is the privilege of the burdens of Torah and mitzvahs. The privilege of the burdens. Yes, they are burdens. Yes, we call it oil malchus shomayim. That's a burden. It's quite a burden, the malchus shomayim. But it's a privilege. It's a privilege. I like to say it's a joke. Don't hold me to the hechruch of the pshat and the mishnah. But it says, how do we know that this man krishma, or what does the mishnah say about this man krishna being sholosh shoyis? Shekein derech b'nei melochim lamed b'sholosh shoyis. The Torah says, b'shoch b'chov kumecho. And what does the mishnah tell us? You know, 3 hours? Don't complain about this man krishma. Do you know why it's so early? Or you know why it's you're given so much time? However, what the real issue is, B'nai Melochim get up at that time. Who? The Torah looks at us as B'nai Melochim. Klal Yisrael of Melochim. This is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love and respect. It's not the pshat in the Mishnah at all, so please. I don't want to discuss it after either, okay? Just a joke, okay? But B'nai Melochim. But this is it. We are. And it's a privilege. It's a privilege. We are privileged. We're privileged with directives. Each and every one of them an absolute benefit, making us into a better human being, making us refining our character, refining our midas, making us more worthy of our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, giving us the ability to connect and to feel closer and closer and closer, to reach David HaMelech's V'ani Kirvas Elikim L'Toiv. And every one of these things is part of a system bringing us that, and it's all privileges, and the results are all greater human validation, greater feeling better about myself, greater enjoyment and happiness in life, and happiness not from the outside pleasures, but happiness for the elevation that it gives me from within by fulfilling my purpose in this world with so much privilege. Now, that's a mouthful, but that's not enough. Because based on the psychology of the human being, he has to not only feel the general sense of privilege. Why is this such a privilege? I think this is a pain. Why is that such a privilege? You know, or as one of my children once said when they were very young and speaking only Hebrew in Eretz Yisrael, and I was trying to teach them Asher Yotzar, And right in the middle, Asher Yotzar, I don't know why, I was out of my mind. The little kid was a baby in the crib, I remember. And then in the middle, the kid says, Ani lo yechola ze yoter midai kadosh. You know, this is too holy. It's too long. It's too holy. I can't do it. So, but that's a privilege. What's the privilege? We have to be able, forgive me, to be able to show them and to explain to them, sometimes on demand, sometimes up front, and sometimes in the course of just general conversation, why yes, the benefit of each and every observance that we do, every brocha that we make, every netilas yadayim that we do, every moida'ani that we do, everything, every tefillah, every posuk in psukah de zimra, everything is all benefit, all benefit. And people need to see that benefit. They need the overall benefit, and they need to feel. Now, everybody may not have to see the benefit of everything, but many people have the things that irk them that they have to see the benefit of that because it's bothering them too much. And we have to be ready and there to be able to do it. We have to create an environment where they feel free to ask such questions, and we have to know be'emunah shleima that everything that Hashem has asked of us is, as the Torah says very clearly, at the end of that whole menu, it says, it's all for your benefit. And I think this is a critical ingredient as well.
Are you also able to answer, I don't know, to this type of question?
What's that? Yes, you can answer, I don't know. But once again, I don't know is a very good answer. You know, I've told the story here that Reb Chaskel Abramsky once told me. He says when he came to London, he came in, he was this young, new dayan there. The old dayan had gotten him into the position, and they touted him as this goyin. And the Reish HaKol comes the first day and asks him a shaila, and a simple shaila, and he says, I don't know. The Reish HaKol was fit to be tied, and he left like, this is the Rav, this is the dayan they brought, doesn't know the answer to a simple question. And he called up the old dayan, and he told the old dayan, and the old dayan was also upset, and he called him up, and he says, how you talking? He says, of course I know the answer. He says, the first lesson that the Jews of London have to learn is that the Rav does not have to know all the answers. So that is a good lesson too. But it's very invalidating when you ignore my question. So if you want to compensate for the invalidation, tell me what a good question that is. That's a very good question. And if you don't know the answer, the attitude should be, I would say has to be, but I don't want to be so forceful, should be, I'll discuss it, I'll look it up, I'll think about it, and don't ever forget to come back and tell them. Because one of the things that you have to know from the other side of the bench is that these kids are a little bit suspicious, and they want to make sure that the Rebbe really knows what's going on. They want to make sure that what the Rebbe is telling them, he's telling them from sources of truth rather than from, they may not articulate this, some may not even be consciously aware of it, but it's there. And he needs that credibility. And there's nothing incredible or uncredible or non-credible about saying, I don't know. But there is something, there is a gum in his credibility if he isn't willing to find out and to come back and to remember that. Okay, I think we should stop at this point unless somebody has some counter-arguments to present or some critical conversation. The hour is late, and hopefully we'll continue some other time.
All these things Rebbe's mentioning, if you reach the Talmidim with these ideas, then it's like Rebbe's saying, it's a formula for success.
But it's okay.
The formula for success, then you can reach the Talmidim okay. With all these ideas. The problem is in today's society, they're so... inundated by all the outside influences.
Okay.
Thank you. On Twitter and Facebook, whatever, okay. And other alternative answers to their problems.
Okay.
And so they're not willing to accept what the Rebbe has to say because they don't.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for that point. That should have been mentioned in this session and not to wait for another session. So if I may, just another couple of moments comment on that. Should I do it dramatically and forcefully, or simply and straightforward? That is the problem! No, not what you say is the problem. What you say is the problem. The problem is that today we don't believe because of this inundation in the Koyach HaTorah and in the Koyach and the receptivity of the Yiddish Neshama. I can swear to you that the Koyach HaTorah has not diminished since Matan Torah to this very day. And the Yiddish Neshama's receptivity, you look at Shleim HaMelech and Shir HaShirim, you'll find it's the same receptivity, the same ugly Jew that says, Poshatati es kutonti rochatzti es raglai, the next minute is belev sholim and nefesh chafetz of running out after him. It's there. And all of this stuff makes it a little bit more challenging, makes us a need for a little bit more innovation, but to believe that we don't have the power to counter that is to say that the Nitzchi is HaTorah is Netzach Yisrael Yishaker. That's what we're saying. It's not true. And that's the, now, forgive me, that wasn't meant as an attack on you. In fact, I'll tell you who I was attacking, but I'm not going to tell you. And it's a whole group of people. But yeah, that's the mistake. That's the excuse that we use today. Because we're not succeeding as much as we should. And we're not succeeding as much as we could. And we don't know what to do about it. We wouldn't think of, let's better train the mechanchim so they should know what in the world they're doing and how to reach the Talmidim. No, that's ridiculous because we haven't done it in the previous generation, so not going to do it today. What do you mean? The old Rebbeim didn't have any training.
It's not true. Look at what Rabbi Meir Shapiro writes about that. Look at what the Chazon Ish writes about. I'll show you tons. They send me all the information that agrees with what I say. They send me constantly all this information. They also all the Gedolei Olam, Rav Shach, this way, I'll show you letters that Mamish Avada, you have to, with you must. It's Oysim Aleches Hashem Beremiyo if they're not properly trained. But what we're doing instead of saying, oh, it's the access is so great. The internet, the society, the this, the that, the other thing. It's all true. It's worse than it ever was. But it's only worse in that that person who is not satisfied with what we have to offer him can move away faster and further than ever before. That's true. But we can reach them. And if we reach them, we can. It's a harder job, I'll admit. It's the challenges are much greater. It's push it, you know. I'll give you one example. The challenge used to be that there was one. I remember that. You don't remember, but I remember the day of the party line telephone. You know what that meant? You can't have a private conversation on your telephone unless your upstairs neighbor could also pick it up and listen, because two or three parties would share the same phone. Then we, Baruch Hashem, we graduated from the party line, you don't remember that, to the phone of the kitchen. You guys probably don't remember that either. There was one phone in the kitchen. Wow, that's great. Everyone who talks, everybody else hears what they're talking about. No private conversations. Then they went, okay, there's a couple of extensions in the house, but you could pick up one extension and hear the other one. Then somebody invented this cutoff button that you could talk on one extension and still hear. And nobody else can pick up the extension, but they always walk over to the kid's room, you know, like this. You take a cup or something, you know, and you hear what's going on. Today, I could do anything I want, go any place. I walk out of the house. I can call you you think I'm calling from China, you think I'm calling from around the corner, and I'm really calling from China. Everything. And it's all except those days. Today, someone once put it, this is not my word, it's the equivalent, the pritzus and the exposure that our kids have today with the internet and with the all the electronics that they have at their fingertips is the equivalent if someone would have knocked on our grandparents' door and say, is your daughter home? She's 14 years old. Yes, I'm a 35-year-old goy, and I would like to come into your daughter's room upstairs and spend the evening with her. That's exactly what it's equivalent to. And that's what's happening. But that's not the cause. That's the problem. That's the challenge. That's what exacerbates it. But the Koyach HaTorah is immutable. And if you don't believe that it can break through anything, then you're an apikoyrus. Yes. And if you don't believe in the receptivity of the Yiddish and Neshoma, then maybe you're not Jewish. I don't know. But it's there. It's real. It's true. And this is the problem. We don't believe in it enough. We don't believe in the Koyach HaTorah enough ourselves. We don't realize how receptive every single neshama is. They're receptive to truth. They're receptive to love. They're receptive to meaning. They're receptive to happiness. But this is why we have to. They're not receptive to information presented in lecture staccato form. I'm not sure what staccato is, but I think it's something like just like this. That's the point.
If a person has reached, why is it that they would not fall for that, the challenges of
the what?
If a person was reached and he is filled up from the Torah, how come if he has like the Nisayon of?
Well, I'll tell you. See, that's a very good question. There is another point too. If you recall at the beginning, I said that chinuch is tchilas knisas odom. The chinuch is the tchila. The knisa he has to do himself. You have to give him the tools and the inspiration and the information and the depth of understanding and feeling and emotion to be able to constantly elevate himself. Which really, in other words, would say if a person doesn't learn Musa, he's doomed. If he's not constantly going, the Goyin says, Pshat in the Posuk, Oira Chaim Lamala Lamaskil, Leman Sur Mishol Moto. He says, the way for a wise person, the way of life is to go up in order not to go down, because he says there's no plateau. You could stand at a plateau for a few moments in Ruchnius, but if you're not going up, you must go down. So we have to give them the tools to continue. I'm fond of telling these people, I say, if I wouldn't get up to go to the minyan every day and to learn every day, I'd go off the derech too. I'm sure. No question about it.
have to grow. You learn Musa every day without it, constantly focusing and reading. The Odata Yoy Moshe Rabbeinu, I've said this here so many times, stood in front of the door of Deo and reviewed with them at the end of his life all of the miracles that they witnessed at Maimon Har Sinai and the Yamsu for this. They ate mon for breakfast that day, and he says, V'yodato Hayoim. You know it, it's knowledge. We live it, we're living it today. Return it to your heart. Targum says, return it. Who could lose it? I stood by Har Sinai. I lived in the Midbar 40 years. I heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Kol Hashem Midaber. If you're not, take the idea and return it to the heart. That's what Musa is. That's exactly Musa. What the Bali Musa, taking it from here to here. The longest distance in the world, and I would say the distance that you have to traverse every single day of your life. That's another tool that we have to give him. That's another information we have to give him. That's something we have to know ourselves. But Lemaisa, to say that, and forgive me for being so, you know, I just did it for effect. But, you know what I mean? But I think that's a big, big sorrow today. And I'll tell you something else. You guys should not be guilty of that sorrow, because you have a very special opportunity to appreciate what learning is, to appreciate the depths of learning, to appreciate the excitement of learning, to learn Musa. You have so much, and you can see what? There's nothing out there that can satisfy. Everybody, all these guys will tell you they spend their lives running around from one thrill, one pleasure to another, just like a dog running around in circles chasing his tail, and ends up with nothing. They'll tell you that. In fact, they'll tell you the good news. The good news is the gashmias and the exposure. How do you like that? It's good news too. You know what the good news is? Every cloud has a silver lining, they used to say. You know what the good news is? The good news is like this. That it used to be that a person would spend the first 60 years of life just trying to make it. So at that point, you really didn't expect to be happy. I don't have money, I don't have this, I don't have that, until I buy a house, until I settle my family. By the time he's in his 60s already, it's starting to hurt over here and over here and over here and over here. He doesn't know what to do with himself. I give up on this world. This world's not going to bring me any great joy. Today, they're making it early. They're experiencing thrills and pleasures that our great-grandparents never imagined in their wildest dreams with the science fiction writers and everything else that could ever exist. And they're running out of steam very early because they're still not happy. The drugs say that they're not happy. The drinking says they're not happy. The suicide says that they're not happy. The divorces says that they're not happy. The gambling says that they're not happy. The rates that mental health professionals can charge say that nobody's happy. And they realize it. By the time they're 16, 17, if they're smart and sensitive, by the time they're 20 and 22 and 23, if they're a little duller, they say, there's nothing out there. What am I going to do? And that's why they're coming back. Problem is, there's still so many that are going that way. But so these challenges are real, and they're serious, and they're dangerous. But it's even more dangerous to think that they're the problem. They're not the problem. We are the problem. The lack of appreciation of the Koyach HaTorah is the problem. The lack of the appreciation of the depth of the receptivity of every Jewish neshama is the problem. And unless we get that straight, then we're never going to resolve this problem. You're right. Without those two yediyas, then we're not going to resolve. If we realize that, anyway. Have a good one.